Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Welcome back to the Sometimes Pomp and Always Joe Show. Donnie Chedrick has joined me. Donnie Football for the noon hour. Donnie, something incredible happened today. For some odd reason, I asked Ray Fittipaldo during his appearance if he played an instrument as a child, and it turned out Ray did indeed play the trumpet. But that was just a prelude to what happened next, and it was Limits revealing that for 1 year in fourth grade, he played the clarinet, and it brought the house down. The texters went wild. We were all picturing a microscopic Limits playing the clarinet, practicing up in his room. I mean, is this thing? Did you know this?
I did not.
Your reaction?
Pretty good at it, Limits. You like the clarinet?
No, I was so bad I had to quit, and I didn't want to practice because I didn't really like playing the clarinet.
There's like that
much.
Little wooden piece.
The reed, they called it. The reed. I would always lose the
Jeff
reed.
The Jeff Reed, yeah.
I would lose the reed. We'd have to replace those things so frequently because they would just disappear.
You know what I never understood? And I don't know if you had to do this, Joe. I don't know when this started. I don't know when it ended either, if it's still going. Like, I don't know if Austin had to do it at Baldwin. But we had to learn in, like, second or third grade, like, in music class in elementary school, how to play the recorder.
We did talk about that. Everybody played the recorder.
Still to this day, don't know why I needed to learn how to rock hot cross buns on the recorder when I was, like, 8 years old. But
did you play an instrument after that? I picture you as maybe a French horn player. Tuba, perhaps, Donnie? Did you drums? Anything?
No, I did not.
Hmm. Well, it's good to have
you
here.
What if I had that big drum, like in the marching band?
That's what I'm picturing you, yes.
If we started a 93.7 The Fan band, who would play what instrument?
Oh, is that a great question.
What would Donnie play? Would Donnie be on the drums? I think Donnie would be on the drums.
Donnie has the big bass drum. Crowley on the flute, right?
Didn't Pony used to play, like, didn't he used to play the flute?
What?
Didn't he say that?
Oh, I don't know that.
Did he?
I don't know. I mean,
you have to ask him.
He's not in today. But if we find that out,
somebody said something on the text line that there was an instrument that Pony played.
Well, Malzy, perhaps. What would he? Would be the lead singer? I don't know. He would want that.
What about you, lead singer?
I could do that for sure.
With your neck, where you
the little lilt?
Really, get into it?
Yeah. Texter says I'm certain that Philip Pony played the flute.
Wow.
I don't know if that's
who knew,
true.
Donnie. Who knew?
Can you picture that? Holding it off to the side, looking ridiculous.
Like the guy from Jethro Tull. What was his name? Jethro Tull, I guess.
Yeah.
Was it?
Sure.
Was Jethro Tull's lead singer named Jethro Tull? No, it was some other guy. It wasn't Jethro Tull.
I'm not familiar with their band.
Limits, I played the trombone.
Ian Anderson.
Ian Anderson. There you go. That's right.
Not familiar with their game.
No relation to Ian Moran. You remember him, the Penguins defenseman?
Or Ian Snell.
I remember Colin
or
Moran.
Ian Snell. Or Colin Moran. Yeah.
Old Redbeard.
Or Jimmy Anderson. I played the trombone, and I was mentioning to Limits that the French name for it, because I had to do a book report, was the sack butt, which is interesting, Donnie.
And what was that?
The French name for a trombone.
A sack butt is what it was called.
Yes, I don't.
Did you like laugh your way through that one? Did you have to present it in front of the class?
I could
picture a young Joe Starkey wheezing out and about.
There's Malsy.
That brought the house down. Malsy?
I'm sorry. I'm disgusted right now. First of all,
happened?
I think City Limits almost read a joke about Filippone when he said he played the flute.
Does he play the flute?
Yeah, he plays the flute. And that's gave it all away.
There
was something else that was included.
I think there
was a modifying word there that was an anti-Filippone take. Second,
we thought he was Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull, with one leg in the air playing the flute.
I'm horrified, but I can say this and at least put myself out there first off and say, I used to think Molly Hatchet was like the name of like the, you know, oh yeah, that woman, Molly Hatchet, right? So I've done this before, but hearing you say, who was the lead singer of Jethro Tull? Well, it was Jethro Tull. Just filled me with disgust.
These guys didn't correct me. He had to look it up.
I don't know who it is.
Sprinting down the hall, getting ready to say Ian Anderson.
Oh, yeah, Jethro Tull. Yeah, that's like the lead singer of Bad Company. First name Bad, last name Company.
Let's figure this out, Malsy. Hold on.
Okay.
Because Limits threw out a question.
God, this show would be a mess if it was the three of us.
Upon revealing that he played the clarinet for 1 year.
Yeah.
Limits.
It's a woodwind instrument.
Yeah. What instrument would each of us play if the fan hosts formed a band? I have Crowley on flute, Donnie on bass drum, Limits on clarinet, you as the lead singer. We didn't know if Pony actually played the flute.
No, he would give Pony like something where I think like he could play bass, I bet.
Yeah. How about Doran?
Drums?
Drums,
percussion.
Yeah.
I tried to play drums in fourth grade when they give you the little cover. They wouldn't even let you hit the snare drum. And I felt like, oh, yeah, you just hit the drum. Man, way harder than that.
Can we get Josh Roundtree involved in this, Donnie?
Oboe. I might be able to do the cowbell.
The cowbell?
But yeah.
What would our boss, Craig, play? The piccolo?
The recorder?
The Brian piccolo?
Maybe, I don't know.
The recorder, man.
Yeah, everybody play. Even Donnie has
horrifying
to play
sound when it's played by somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. There's a great video on YouTube of a guy playing Freebird, the Freebird guitar solo on recorder. It's
Really?
Was it mandatory
at
North Catholic?
Yeah, I feel like Catholic school music classes, you had to play the recorder, I feel like. We're going to teach all these little, like, you know, little brats how to play something.
Yeah.
Has no practical application. Anyway.
Thank you, Malsy.
Laughing about Jethro Tull because Lennox's one of his three favorite songs in the world is the classic Bungle in the Jungle.
I love that song.
Anyway,
Donnie,
boys,
you familiar with that one?
Well, it's Bungle.
Yeah, yeah.
In the
I know
jungle.
That song.
Yeah, yeah. See, I would be the lead singer.
That's Ian Moran.
You would actually be the lead singer.
Jimmy Anderson.
That's what you get for loving me every day since you've been gone.
I think we'd be good.
Isn't
I think we'd be
good.
Really
good. Malsy.
That's what you get for loving me.
Goodbye. Impressed.
If Pomp were here, he'd be impressed, but he's never here. Donnie, where should we go right now?
Pomp would be the lead singer who like misses half the shows.
Right. He would, he brings the house down when he's here.
Yeah.
You got to give him that.
He's like Elvis.
Yeah. Donnie Chedrick here for the hour. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. All right, Donnie. First thing I wanted to ask you and Limits as younger guys, and I'll give my take here too. I don't even want you to think. Marc-Andre Fleury played his last NHL game last night. And yes, the farewell tour for Fleury was longer than the one for Jordy Rand at KDKA. I get that. But we have to finally say goodbye. When I say Fleury, you think what? What vision pops in your mind?
Still great player and great human. Like he's beloved by everybody. But you can't help but looking at the whole career, at least here in Pittsburgh, and not think too, okay, the guy won them a Stanley Cup, part of a great team in 2009. He was still part of the teams that got back there years later. But, man, he had some playoff blow-ups.
He did.
That I feel like don't – people will bring them up, but people don't like to discuss.
Right.
Like what we saw after that Stanley Cup win in 2009. How ugly some of those playoff runs got. I mean, we had Tomas Vokoun leading this team in, like, what, 2012, 2013?
Yes, we did.
Because things got so bad.
I just read a column. I was reading some stuff this morning, some old Fleury stuff, and I wrote one after his fourth straight playoff meltdown. Every year his save percentage was under 900, and he went to see a sports psychologist that summer, and it helped him. Like, it helped a lot of guys have that as part of their, you know, arsenal these days, part of their posse. You know what I mean? You have your exercise person, you have your mental strength, whatever, that type of person. Mm-hmm. Well, he got that summer, and it improved. But that summer, he hit bottom because he wasn't even one of five goalies chosen for Team Canada for tryouts that summer. Plus, Vokoun had just replaced him in the playoffs. That was like rock bottom for Fleury. But to his credit, he bounced back. And if I was listing guys responsible for the second cup under Sully, he did a lot of the heavy mm-hmm. lifting. The Capitals were better than them that year, and Fleury stole that series.
Speaking of the Capitals, I think back to that series in 09.
Yeah.
That was like the first point for me watching them in the playoffs, thinking that this team would, like, that team would actually win it all, because it's game 7 against the Caps in DC.
Yeah.
You got Alexander Ovechkin with a breakaway, the greatest goal scorer now to ever live.
Right.
And Fleury just stonewalls the guy.
And one of the great saves in Penguins history.
Right at that point, because I think it was still a scoreless game. The Pens ended up blowing them
out. Yes, it was.
What,
7-2 it was early in the game.
Something.
Yeah.
But like that point on, you're like, okay, they're going to win this game. I have no doubt in my mind. And I think this team can run it right to the Stanley Cup final.
Wonder Twin, what do you think of?
Well, I think about how...
Were you even... How old were you in 09?
I would have been 8.
Playing the clarinet,
I
no
mostly,
doubt.
But I mostly remember the 16-17 runs are the ones that I was like cognitively obviously able to believe all the memories and all be able to remember them.
Yeah,
I remember a lot of those blow-ups with Fleury in some of those playoff games, and me basically just about to jump off the bandwagon because I was a big Murray guy when he came up. But Fleury bailed them out multiple times in the playoffs when they needed him most. Like, they do
he
not
did.
Win those two Stanley Cups without Marc-Andre Fleury, and he deserves a lot of credit for that, even though Matt Murray was mainly the main face in net.
Well, two of the three. I mean, Fleury.
Well, Fleury 09, yes, obviously.
Obviously 09. 16, he really wasn't a factor at all. He played, I think, one game and lost to Tampa. But 17, he was mm-hmm. he was as important as
they don't make it.
They don't make it past the Capitals.
No, not at all. And I know that we poo-poo this a little bit and don't give it its due. I do think that Murray, whether it was practices, encouragement, I feel like he was good for Matt Murray during that 16 run. Now, obviously a lot behind the scenes and he didn't play as much, but I feel like having somebody like Marc-Andre Fleury in that room too was definitely not a detriment to Matt Murray.
Well, Donnie, why did they call themselves Jethro Tull then if the guy's name isn't Jethro Tull? Is that like a mythical figure like Paul Bunyan? What's the inspiration for the name Jethro Tull? Limits, could you look that up?
I have no idea, but I will find out.
Thank you. Call now. Two tickets to see AC/DC when the Pretty Reckless Tour comes to Acrisure Stadium on Thursday, May 8th. Caller number 3 to our dear friend City Limits will get those tickets. It's 12:21. Now's the time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums at 724-443-5610. Yes, Limits.
So what I have come to learn is that the agent for Jethro Tull studied history in college and came up with the name, an 18th century English agricultural pioneer who invented the seed drill, Jethro Tull.
Donnie, I had no
How
idea.
How about that?
A horticulture expert? Was
I don't know.
The inspiration for Jethro Tull? What is happening here? Donnie, among the Steelers draft picks, who was your favorite one?
Oddly enough, I think it's the running back they picked, Caleb Johnson.
Yeah.
Because even though you initially saw people jump on the 40 time and they're like, oh, this guy kind of just looks like Najee Harris, I don't really see it that way. Not to mention they got the dude at pick 83. It's not like they used a first-round pick. They did not use their top pick on this guy. And it seemed like for a lot of people he was like running back 3, maybe 4. In this draft, behind the two guys that went in the first round, obviously Genty was going to be the number one. Hampton was number two. But they sit around and they end up getting this guy at pick 83. They don't have to move. And it was tough for them to not have that second round pick. But as they picks started going by, you see a couple of other running backs off the board. I would say Henderson probably that third running back, and then Johnson behind him.
Yeah.
But I think they got a player here that, sure, maybe the 40 time looks similar to what Najee Harris's was, and you think, man, I really wish they just had a burner. I wish they had a dude that could run away from people.
Yeah.
But he looks like a faster player. He plays the game like a faster player. And I think my favorite part about him, he fits the offense better. He fits like that Arthur Smith zone scheme better. And he can be a better decision maker back there when he has the football in hand. Because I feel that was a detriment to Najee Harris's game, that he kind of struggled to read what was in front of him.
Definitely, I thought vision. What was an issue with him? Vision and explosiveness, and I hope this kid has it. What did you make of Arthur Smith telling, I think, the Steelers website the other day that he really didn't get to install the run system he intended, that he tailored his system to Najee's running style, that the outside zone stuff he put on the shelf for a year to adjust to Najee? What did you make of that?
It made me think back to the comments that were made once they ultimately decided not to exercise the fifth-year option with Najee Harris, but then they came out and said, well, we want to see how he fits into this offense. And I
going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Obviously, we don't know what the conversations were had behind those doors, but maybe it got decided by Smith, by Tomlin, by a group of guys on the offensive side that thought, well, you know, we still have him here. Here is what he is good at, so we have to adjust to the player. I don't think that's an awful idea, because I do think that the best offensive minds in football, they are able to kind of change on the fly and center their offense around their best players or key players. Like if the Steelers would have had, let's say, like a Lamar Jackson situation, you know, if we can go back in time years ago and they have a quarterback like that.
Yeah.
We saw how the Ravens were able to adjust. Like they went from having a statue that just threw the football a mile in Joe Flacco to a guy that we've really never seen before. And they made that transition look pretty seamless. Like I think the best offensive minds in football can kind of just kind of move on the fly and evaluate what type of athletes they have and form their offense around it.
I agree. I think the Shanahans delivered a great example of that when they drafted RG3 and scrapped everything and essentially installed a college style, you know, read option type thing that now we see with more, the Ravens also with who was the coordinator when he came into the league for them? Baltimore's offensive coordinator before Monken and even before that. Who was that guy, Limits? I can't remember the name.
Greg Roman.
Roman. Yeah. And that's exactly what you're talking about is not having so much of an ego that you have to have your system, but I think the Shanahans were a great example. They were like, this kid is unbelievable. And we're just going to, we'll adapt to him. And he was unbelievable as a rookie, RG3. And
oh, without question.
Then he got hurt.
Yeah, I think the injuries are really what derailed that career, because it was the bad knee injuries and he was done.
No doubt. And then he tried to play through it in that playoff game, I think, against Seattle. But mm-hmm. Najee was an interesting case, wasn't he? Because even this past season, I thought if you took any stretch of his career, I thought the three games against Vegas, Jets, Giants, he looked as good as he had ever looked in his whole career. At that point, I was saying, yeah, maybe it is a good idea to sign this guy to a three-year, $18 million deal or something. Something like that. They were all 100-yard games. He was ripping off long runs. He looked like a new guy, but, and I'll include myself in this, a lot of us were fooled because, like Russell Wilson, like the team itself, when they faced stiffer competition, they were sort of unmasked, right? Because for the rest of the year, he almost never did anything the rest of the year.
He was brutal that second half. Like after the bye week, it was, I don't want to say useless, but it was close to it. Because yeah. I remember the conversations we would have, Joe, like on those Fridays leading into games, and after what he did in that three or four game stretch, we had the debate of, did they make the mistake on this guy?
Yes.
And then things turned after the bye week, and it was just little to no production out of him. I mean, he was having games where he had like 2 or 2.5 yards per carry.
Yep.
And I know it's not all
Several.
On the running back in that case, but man, I mean, it was ugly seeing what little they could accomplish from that part of the game.
Man, was it ever. And now, are you convinced? See, it rang alarm bells for me when I saw Nick Saban say that Caleb Johnson reminds me of Najee. If you give me Najee with some explosiveness, you've got a hell of a running back. There's been this debate over Johnson's subpar 40 time compared to his GPS time and his, you know, football in pads time where he had a lot of explosive runs. Are you convinced that this dude is going to deliver the kind of explosiveness that they desperately need and that Najee didn't have?
So I don't know if it will be like that true, I'm going to run away from everybody speed, because when it does come down to it, his 40, I think, was in the 4.5s. Najee's was in the 4.6s. But he looks like, when you just watch the dude's film, he looks like he plays the game faster, because not everybody's game speed matches how fast they can run in a straight line for 40 yards. You know, we've seen that work against players where it's a receiver that runs a 4.2, but when they're on the field, they don't look nearly as fast. But I feel like Johnson is a player that plays faster than what that 40 time says.
Yeah.
I don't know if he gives them the true runaway ability you might see with a Saquon or Jahmyr Gibbs. But again, you got the dude in the late third round.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be upset if the guy is a productive player when he's pick 83 instead of pick, what was it, 22 that Najee was?
Yeah. I just hope he gives them a little bit more in that area. And his college stats, like even Najee's college stats indicated that he was not going to be a home run hitter in the pros, you know?
Right.
He didn't have a ton of long runs at Alabama either.
Yeah, he didn't have games where he truly ran away from people. And it's always fair to wonder, not that every Alabama running back ends up being a bad player, because there's plenty of good ones that get into the league, but kind of like when you have an Ohio State quarterback, it's fair to wonder, oh, Alabama running back, how easy was it for him,
yeah,
given their offensive line that normally has five NFL players on it?
For sure. Big sports news breaking as we speak. Greg Popovich will no longer coach the Spurs. He's transitioning to full-time role as team's president of basketball operations. That's one of the most accomplished coaches in the history of professional sports. What do you have, 5 championships there? Yeah, 5 NBA championships, and is the NBA's career leader in wins. Who's the greatest coach of all time, Donnie, in all sports, in your humble opinion?
Oh, Jesus.
Phil Jackson? Bill Belichick? Chuck Knoll?
I mean, if do we
Scotty
count,
Bowman?
Do we count any college here?
No.
Like a John Wooden?
No, only pro.
I mean, Belichick.
Phil Jackson?
Belichick, I would say, is up there because
of the
work he did as a defensive coordinator with the Giants, winning a couple of titles, and
yeah,
then he goes to New England, but people are always going to knock him for, you know, his career without Tom Brady in it. But
well, let me give you some choices.
What, 8 rings total?
Exactly. Let me give you guys some choices. Are you ready, Limits?
Yes, I am.
I'd like you to put your hand in the pile here, as Mike Tomlin might say.
I would love to. I was going to put this in the breakdown, so I'm glad that we get a chance to talk about it now.
Most decorated coaches in American sports history. Vince Lombardi is up there. 5 NFL titles, including the first 2 Super Bowls.
They named a trophy after him.
Yes, they did. Phil Jackson never missed the playoffs, and he had 10 NBA championships, 6 with the Bulls, 4 with the Lakers. Some college coaches will exclude them. Red Auerbach was a coach and a GM. 9 titles in 10 seasons, Donnie. Casey Stengel had 5 straight World Series titles. Scotty Bowman led 3 different teams to titles. Penguins, Canadians, Red Wings. And how many? Record 9 Stanley Cups. Those are the choices. Who are you picking? And Popovich is up there, but he ain't there.
I kind of like Phil Jackson out of that crew you said. Like,
well, that's the most, really.
Yeah, I mean, given the era he was in, he won the title 10 times. Like, I'm not going to try to take away the accomplishments of coaches in eras long ago, but once you had a really good team, it was easier to kind of keep a dynasty going.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, Jackson got to coach with some of the greatest ever of the sport, but I mean,
but those guys couldn't win without him.
Right. Never missed the playoffs, and he won.
That's
10
what I'm going with that too. Scotty Bowman's close.
You know who's underrated,
who?
Joe? By the way,
Chuck
I'm not going to say he's no Joe Gibbs.
Joe Gibbs because he won it without the elite quarterbacks. Yes. I agree.
3-time Super Bowl champion.
With three different quarterbacks, none of whom are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, now he's been in NASCAR for years.
Can you name those quarterbacks, Limits?
Wrong. Williams, Theismann.
Yes.
And
wrong.
I don't know the third.
Mark Rippon tore apart the
Mark
Bills.
Rippon.
It was horrifying. Who's the greatest coach of all time?
I can't get the Auerbach number out of my mind of just how dominant they were. Now, obviously, those Celtics teams were playing against level of competition that was probably not nearly the same as the team that the Celtics were.
Yes.
And they basically played the Lakers almost every single year.
Yes, they did.
I would say Belichick has a really good argument for this, too.
I think he really does. I'm with Donnie. It's Phil Jackson. 10 titles. And here's the thing. Donnie pointed it out. Yeah, he had Jordan on one team and Shaq and Kobe on the other, but those guys couldn't win without him.
Right, still have to win. Jordan couldn't win until Phil Jackson got there.
That's even more of an endorsement for him. All right, Donnie, before we get to the Bechtold breakdown, Mike Sullivan just stepped down. Same topic. Greatest coaches in Pittsburgh sports history. I think we have Noel.
No,
obviously,
easily.
Is one at 4-0 in Super Bowls. Changed the entire culture of an organization. We have Danny Murtaugh with 2 World Series titles, 60 and 71. And then I think we have Sully with multiple titles. Unless you want to go to a guy like Jock Sutherland, who you could. I mean, I think he had 5 national championships at Pitt all those years ago. But I think there's a space empty on the Mount Rushmore next to Noel, Murtaugh, and Sully. Do you agree, or is that space taken by somebody?
I mean, I know it's not good radio to agree, but I think those are without question the top 3. I mean, Sullivan winning as coach in Penguins history. He did win the back-to-back Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
I know that last, 7 years they haven't won a playoff series, but and then the other 2 resumes are like very much rock solid. Like, those heads are very much chiseled in the Mount Rushmore, and I think Sullivan's is right there with them.
We're waiting
for a
multiple champion. If Tomlin got that second Super Bowl, he'd have to go there. I just think that second Super Bowl is far away.
Yeah, never got a second one. Tomlin doesn't have a second one.
Bielsma never got a second one. Chuck Tanner was awesome.
That was the name I thought maybe you slot in as number 4.
I thought maybe Badger Bob, because tragically—
Right.
He only got a chance to win one. He did win that. his players won the next one with Scottie Bowman, and he, like Knoll, completely changed the culture of an organization. They were the team that couldn't get over the hump. They were largely losers in a lot of their history, the Penguins, and in came this, you know, eternally optimistic, brilliant head coach, and they won. He put them over the top, and they've never been the same since, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think those are 4 and 5.
Yeah, I would agree. You know what that means, Donnie? It's like when people in England used to gather around their radios to listen to Winston Churchill, only they do it now with limits. It's time for Bechtold's Breakdown. Entire families across America, the world, and even the universe are huddled around their radios getting ready for what Limits has to say.
You're going
to
compare me to like the fireside chats that were given in the U.S. during the war as well?
No, I was going to elevate you above them. Are you ready?
I am ready for it. Let's do it on this Friday, May 2nd, presented by our good friend Jake at Southside Plumbing and Heating. Andrew Berry said that the Browns did not plan to draft 2 quarterbacks. That's not the plan. But we believe in positional value and thought a 5th-round pick was a good price to pay for Shedeur.
Because you saw how valuable he'd be on the open market and how many teams want him, right? Get out of here. Donnie, we talked earlier about it's been my position since that happened. I immediately thought, who in the history of the NFL has drafted a quarterback in the 3rd and 5th round? Limits, why don't you tell Donnie the answer you found?
The answer is 0. Never happened.
Only 11 times since it went to a 7-round draft all those years ago has any team even taken 2 quarterbacks, Donnie, and never that close together. Am I right?
That would be correct. The closest that I found, dating back to 1994, Gabriel and Sanders is number 1. Previously, the record was between 100 picks.
And Donnie, that only fuels these conspiracy theories that I don't necessarily agree with, that they were told to pick him, or that the owner stepped in and said, we're taking this guy. That somebody may have done a favor to Dion to avoid the embarrassment of Shedeur becoming Mr. Irrelevant or not getting drafted at all. Nobody has ever done this.
Well, where it looks even dumber to me, it's not even the fact that they took Sanders at pick 144, because I think given where he did fall, listen, if you want to deal with whatever baggage comes along with him, that's fine. I mean, it is up the Browns' alley to do something like this. I mean, they were the team that ended up drafting guys like Brady Quinn and Johnny Manziel after they both slid. Right. Now, that was just 1st round.
Right.
We're talking there. But they take Sanders, which, by the way, that was their final pick. They did not have a pick in round 6 or 7. So Sanders was their last pick. The just really head-scratching one to me, they drafted Dylan Gabriel in the 3rd round.
Right.
Dylan Gabriel was probably not going to get his phone number called before round 7. He was not going to get his name put on a little ticket before round 7. Given the way this quarterback, the quarterback was going in the draft, like that you've kind of seen over the last few years, that like the mid-round quarterback is kind of dying off. It's either you draft a guy very early or you just wait, kind of like the Steelers and other teams did in this one. But you draft a player that does not project well whatsoever to the National Football League beyond saying, well, hopefully he can become Drew Brees or Russell Wilson, two guys that are like below 6 foot who have become Hall of Fame players or borderline Hall of Fame players.
And then you turn around and take another quarterback? Come on.
What is happening here? Not to mention all of the other teams in the draft, the Browns picked quarterback, because nobody took a quarterback between Gabriel and Sanders. It was a 50-pick difference. Nobody jumped up and took, insert Will Howard or Quinn Ewers, who fell later on.
Something very strange is happening here, Donnie.
The Browns picked over the scope of the NFL when it came to the quarterback position. They took 2 in a row.
Having said that, and I'm sorry to interrupt your segment, Lance.
Not at all. This is great.
We agreed earlier that the way Shedeur has handled all this, I actually think gives me hope. I like the kid as a player, by the way. I think that Dion ruined everything by basically there was already going to be a limited market because not a lot of teams were desperate for quarterbacks. And then Dion said he was going to manipulate that market by steering his kid away and from the ones he didn't like. And then he breaks into a conference call, a video call, a job interview that his kid is having with the Tennessee Titans. In comes Dion in the middle of it. It was ridiculous, the whole thing. But the way Shador has handled dropping in the draft, the prank call, all of that stuff, I actually think he's handled it with grace, and it would give me hope, like, hey, maybe this guy is you know, has some attributes that you'd want in a quarterback, that you know, beyond the skill and the toughness.
Taking him at 144, I don't have the problem with. It just looks so dumb on the Browns' part because they took a guy at pick 94 at the same position. So now you are putting yourself in a position once you get to training camp of, okay, well, the battle is really going to be between Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett, and it's like a loser leaves town match because you're not going to cut Dylan Gabriel. You would look like idiots if you cut a third-round pick, and you're not going to cut Shedeur Sanders.
I can't believe, the more you mention it, that they took Dylan Gabriel in the third round.
That
was more surprising than Sanders.
Yes, and that's what makes it look all the dumber. Like, if you take that out of there, if you take out Dylan Gabriel and you insert literally any other player in the draft that's not a QB, and you see Sanders at pick 144 in the fifth round, I think, okay, well, this looks smart on their part. Okay, the kid comes with baggage and his dad, whatever, but you're getting a player that, yeah, probably not as good as the draft pundits expected, but I don't think he's as bad as mid to late fifth round, so why not take a shot at him? But the Gabriel thing just sours the whole idea for me because Sanders is absolutely a better player than him.
Limits?
One of those 11 teams that draft two quarterbacks in the seven-round era, your 2022 Pittsburgh Steelers, Kenny Pickett and Chris Oladokun.
That deserves a hand.
And both of them? Yeah. Both of them with Super Bowl rings.
That's right.
Yes.
Neither with the Steelers.
All right.
Wait, so Oladokun won two Super Bowls in a row, then Pickett won a Super Bowl. Does that mean that Mitch Trubisky is going to win a Super Bowl with the Buffalo Bills this
Absolutely.
Year?
Absolutely. You'll have a dynasty
on your
hands.
Lock in your prediction now.
Yes. I think the Bills' defense will improve to the point where they will win the Super Bowl. Guess who they're going to play, Donnie?
Who?
I forgot. I was just mentioning this the other day. Is it Washington I think they're going to play? I think Washington, yeah. Or Bills Lions, perhaps.
That's a good call.
What's your early Super Bowl pick? Right now, pick the Super Bowl. Steelers against who?
I don't know why, but like, why do I want to say the Chiefs again get there?
Oh. Donnie.
I will not be picking the Chiefs this year. I will tell you
that
right now.
The Bills never get over the hump,
man. They will.
I know.
Eventually, it will happen.
No, the smart money is against the Bills. I realize that.
They have beaten the Chiefs four straight times in the regular season, but every time when it matters most, they can't get there.
Well, you know what they have to do then, Donnie? Lose to the Chiefs in the regular season.
Or hope that somebody else takes them out. Hope somebody else takes them out, and then they, you know, I mean, the Steelers, let's be honest, they're two runs to the Super Bowl. The Broncos took out the Patriots in 05, and then in 08, Brady's knee got blown out.
I think the Eagles are going back. Like, where's their weakness?
Yeah, I mean,
they're unbelievable. And then they draft five straight defensive players to start their draft. And you know Howie Roseman probably drafted some good ones.
Right. Like, you just feel every time they pick a player now that guy is going to become good.
It's unreal.
Or useful.
And what will the Lions look like without Ben Johnson? I wonder.
Good question. And then you come back with Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley and Smith and A.J. Brown and that offensive line. And they're really, really, really good.
I could go for an Eagles-Bills.
So could I, Donnie, and thank you. That'd be a nice game.
Maybe I'll go with that pick.
Limits, you got a Super Bowl pick?
Lions-Bills. I predicted it last year. I'm going to say it again until it happens.
Next.
Should Bubba Chandler be up here, boys? He had another really good outing, 5 innings, 1-run ball, 25 and a third innings for Chandler this year. He struck out 36 and has allowed 4 runs, ERA of 142, an 0.67 whip, 122 opponent average. I think he is going to be here in probably the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Should he be up here? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this team is on life support at the current moment. I mean, they're sitting, what, at 12-20. They have a good team coming into the ballpark tonight through the weekend that could very well leave them at 12-23, or maybe we want to be courteous, we go 13-22. I think it's going to get uglier than what it already is, and it's already pretty bad. They're the third worst team in the National League, or third worst team in baseball.
Yep.
They are among the worst in a lot of the offensive metrics. I understand the pitching hasn't necessarily been the issue, so you would ask, like, okay, well, you know, it's not like they need Chandler, but you at least replace somebody like a Majinski who can then move to the bullpen where he's better suited, or Bailey Falter who has struggled.
I don't understand the Majinski thing. What was the fascination with that? And then the Endy Rodriguez, it was like we just had, you know, a month and a half of spring training, and then at 11:59 on a midnight deadline, they're like, oh yeah, let's make Majinski a starter and Endy Rodriguez our first baseman. What are we doing here? Yes, to answer your question, Bubba Chandler should be here. And Donnie, I would say that pitching hadn't been the problem until about, I don't know, 5 days ago, and then they got 8, 9, 9, 3, and 8 runs put on them consecutively. So get him up here now and have him make a start, his next start. So if that's 5 days from now, that's in St. Louis. Do it.
I mean, I think they're going to wait for a home game, but yes, I agree with that idea.
All right, then start him Friday, May 9th against Atlanta.
It would be the same, basically the same weekend as Skeens
last
year.
That's what Zangrilli said.
Oh, my God.
Zangrilli said Atlanta.
They have San Diego for 3. Then they have Majinski opening the St. Louis series in St. Louis. Then they have resurgent Atlanta. Donnie, I give you credit. You said Atlanta would surge. Then they go at the Mets. Then they go at Philly. Then they have Cincinnati here. Then they have Milwaukee here for 4. And then they go to the West Coast. This is a disaster,
Joe,
Donnie.
I think this could be the final month of Shelty. I really do.
Well, I heard.
And I know he wasn't in yesterday because his son's graduation. But I think the date to circle, and Dan brought this up with the guys a couple of weeks ago, like the 60-game theory. Their 60th game of the season, correct me if I'm wrong, is a Sunday, June 1st game at San Diego. This team could very well, the way things look, they'd be lucky to be 20-40
right
by the time they get out of that. And I think that's a point in the season where you have to cut the bait.
Even Arizona is a winning team this year, and that's part of that West Coast trip. I mean, wow, what a schedule. And you're right. I was just going to say, Charrington was on his show a couple weeks ago talking about how he thinks, and I think the number he used was, he was talking about individual players, and when you really draw your conclusions on where to go with guys is the 40-50 game mark. He might have said 50-60, though. Somewhere in there, by game 60, I think, I agree, you're going to have a decision on Shelty. And this is not going to go well. This is not going to go well. Come on, Limits. Padres at Cardinals, Braves at Mets, at Philly, Cincy, Milwaukee for 4, West Coast for Arizona and San Diego?
I don't think it'll happen.
Oh, my God.
But if they get swept against San Diego at home and they lose 3 against the Cardinals, like let's say they lose 6 in a row, pile on the losses against the Cubs, I think there's a chance, I don't know, there's a possibility that they could make a move by that Atlanta series when they return home.
Like, so what, they'd be 12-26?
Give me their record over the next 20. I just read you the opponents twice there. That's a 28-game stretch that will bring them to, you said it, will that bring them to 60?
Yes, they're 12-20 right now.
So 32
games in.
So over that 28-game stretch, what do you think their record will be? I read you the opponents.
I think they're going,
including 6 with the Padres.
I'm going to have them at 8-20. I think they're 20-40 after 60 games.
Limits?
I'm in a similar boat. I think they win 9 games in that span. That's what, 9-19 or so?
I say 1-27.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you now?
I think Skeens gets a win.
I feel like, just because I cannot forget.
Donnie, do you agree? It could be 1-27.
What are they, the White Sox? Are they this year's Colorado
Rockies?
Be
one of the worst stretches in league history.
I don't know. They were 8-12 at one point, and since then they're 4-8. So I'll give them that pace, honestly. So in that 28-game stretch, I think they're going to win 7 games, 7-21.
So we're all pretty close.
Yeah. I just remember what Nutting said, Donnie, where basically I've given them everything that they can to win. Like, and if he really does believe that and thinks that this season has to be like the time, I don't even think they can wait until 60 games, or that he'll think in his mind, I'm not even going to wait for 60 games. When I feel it's time, it's time. If they get swept and they come back home and it's really bad and everybody's going to be booing, he might just do it.
What if by miracle they split? They go 14-14. Then what's their record? 26-34. That's still horrible.
Yeah, then everything would stay the same.
They'd still be on a that's still 100 loss pace, is it not?
Yeah, I think maybe 95, right in that range, but yes.
That's a Mulsey answer.
Yeah. Sure.
They would be, what did I say? 26-34?
26-34. Mm-hmm.
So 26 divided by 60 then, right?
Yeah.
All right, 26 divided by 60. And over 162-game schedule, that's 70 wins. So it would be better
70
than
70-92.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Donnie.
Thank you, Joe.
That was wonderful.
One more quick thing to add. There is, please, on Facebook Marketplace that Justin Guerrero of the Trib posted, a pirate ship with 18 water cannons is currently available for $50,000. And people are saying that the Pirates should buy this thing and put it in PNC Park or right outside the ballpark.
Where did this get put on sale from?
On Craigslist?
This is on Facebook Marketplace. Justin Guerrero of the
Trib
tweeted it. Yeah, it looks like a real ship. I don't know if I can turn this monitor around.
No, don't worry about that. That seems too cumbersome.
Can you see it?
No.
No? Donnie, can you see it? Maybe.
Well, is it one that's already being used for pirate games? Like people go on it and drink and stuff, or no?
Well, there's some people on this boat.
You make this sound normal that there's a pirate ship for sale.
It's not normal. It's not.
Well, who has a pirate ship?
That's the point. What I'm saying is, should the pirates buy it and just embrace it?
I don't think that's the story limits. I think the story is, where did it come from?
I don't know.
He makes it sound like there's a used car for sale here, Donnie. It's a pirate ship.
A used pirate ship.
Yeah.
Low mileage.
It's a little ship that has a couple of, like, you know, nice little flags
on it. What do they want for it?
$50,000.
Donnie, that's too much. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, that's maybe just below a league average player. That's like another Tommy Pham they could bring in here.
Right. Tommy Pham. How do they keep running this guy out there every day? Did he play yesterday? Look up the box score, because he played the night before and was 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts.
Yesterday, the Pirates outfield that they deployed was Cruz in center, Reynolds in right, and your friend Alexander Canario in left.
The Canario in the coal mine. I'm going to guess he went 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts.
Canario?
Yeah.
He actually went 1-for-4. He had a hit. He did not strike out in the game. Pirates only struck out twice yesterday.
Yeah.
It didn't
matter. So he's up to .097, Donnie. These are the types of guys you bring in when you're tanking. I thought the tanking was done.
We're in year 6, and it's barely any better.
Did Tommy Pham get in the game?
I don't think he played at all yesterday.
No, he did not. They had to get him off his feet, Joe.
Yeah, that's actually a good line. They had to get him off his feet. Donnie, good luck with your show today. You're a wonderful man.
Thank you.
Joey Wentz, he came in yesterday.
Yeah.
And then Hunter Stratton's ERA is up to 21.6, Donnie. I'm slightly concerned.